Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A little while ago, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration started talking about plans to amend its healthy nutrient content claim regulation. And that's because there have been some changes, because the current criteria was created in 1994, and some of the things that we determined were healthy then may not be healthy now, and some of the things that were not healthy now or then might be considered healthy now. So we're going to be talking about the whole public comment phase of this. The maker of Kind Bars, which contain almonds and other nuts, this all got started because they pushed back against an FDA complaint about their use of the phrase healthy and tasty. They had nuts in their snacks, and they were not considered healthy, and yet nuts are now considered healthy. So, this hour of the program, we're going to be talking about how we should be labeling healthy foods. And our guest is Joan Salgi Blake, a registered dietitian, clinical associate professor of nutrition at Boston University, and the author of a number of books on nutrition, including Nutrition and You and Nutrition from Science to You. What kinds of labels would you like to see as you are doing shopping in the cereal aisle or wherever to indicate that the package says this is a healthy product? What should be looking at the FDA, that is, as it reconstitute what is a healthy product? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And Joan, thank you very much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So we haven't looked at this for a long, long time. It was created last time in 1994. Why do we wait so long?
Oh, boy. You know, the beauty of science, and it's evolving, and the beauty of nutrition science, it's going to be not only evolving, but continue to evolve, because as we get better at the science, we get better at making, you know, dietary guidelines and recommendations. So back in the 1990s, what was the big issue with diet was watching your fat.
Right.
We knew also that you had to watch your heart on healthy saturated fat and your sodium, and watch your dietary cholesterol. But really, fat was where it was at. And now, back in the 1990s, my goodness, now we have come to learn that, yes, we are still really concerned about the heart and healthy saturated fat, but our diets, having low-fat diets, may not be good for your heart or your waist.
Right. So that is something that it's amazing, because we learn something and then we learn something else that's completely the opposite of what we first learned. It's constantly evolving, which means that probably FDA updates need to be a little bit more frequent, don't they? So as it stands now, if you have a product that is high in fat, even though it might be good, the good kind of fat, it could not be labeled as healthy?
That is correct under these old 1994 labeling guidelines. And these FDA puts out these labeling guidelines to manufacturers so they make sure that they use these terms correctly. And this, again, is to protect the consumer. If you see the word healthy on it, you should be comfortable to know that there is a labeling guidelines from the FDA that constitute what makes it healthy. It's just at this point in time, they really need to look at updating it, because
right,
what was considered healthy in the 1990s is not necessarily the same now, you know, even 2016.
Yeah. What about sugar?
You know, that really is the sweet news here. And that's really what was missing back in the 1990s. We weren't concerned too much about added sugars in the diet. And what happened here is that when we decided, okay, we have to watch fat, manufacturers said, okay, well, I'm going to start adjusting my products so they become low in fat, so that this way they'll be more appealing to the public. Well, when you take out fat from a bakery item, in other words, if you have grandma's oatmeal cookies and you try to take all the fat out and make them without any added fat, you're going to end up with grandma's hockey pucks, because they will be dry and really, really
terrible.
Doesn't
sound good.
So when you want If you're going to make something low-fat, which tenderizes the baked products, and you want to take that out or greatly reduce it, you have to add something back that is going to hold on to moisture and make the product moist. So what did that end up being was added sugars. So what happened is now that we started on this whole low-fat era, they started reformulating cookies and donuts and everything that became low-fat, but because to make it palatable, and let me tell you, the number one driver of food choice among Americans is taste. Mm. So it doesn't matter what the label says. If it tastes good, they're not going to buy it. So I mean, I'm sorry, if it doesn't taste good, they're right. not going to buy it. They go by their palate. So to make the low-fat cookie palatable and taste good, they had added sugar, a lot of added sugar to it, so that it became tender. And, of course, you know, we all have an innate desire for sweetness, so we just loved it. I mean, one bite into it, it was just sugar heaven. But now we have come to learn that a diet that is low in fat, it could be low in saturated fat, but if it's high in simple sugar, simple carbohydrates, it may not be very good for your heart nor your waist.
Hmm. Not good for your heart. Sugar is not good for your heart.
No, it isn't, because we're seeing that those kinds of diets could raise something called fat in your blood and could be problematic. We know that a diet that is very calorie dense, has a lot of calories, and sugar can quickly add calories to a diet, is potentially not kind to your waist. You know, you're taking more calories than you need, and you do that chronically, and you know that you're going to lose the battle with the bathroom scale.
Hmm. I'm the daughter of a sugar broker, and my dad and I used to go to the IGA supermarket on Saturday mornings with a cotton candy machine, if you can imagine. And I, as a kid, got to make cotton candy and eat as much of it as I wanted.
That would just whip sugar,
just sugar. Just total sugar, and I must tell you, I loved it in those years.
Absolutely.
It doesn't taste quite the same now, but it was something. There was a lot of sugar in our house. So let's talk about what kinds of labels people are putting on their products now. Is it sort of a standard thing if you've got something that you think is healthy that you're going to get away with it, because people will buy a product if it just says on the package, this is a healthy snack?
Right. Exactly. So, you know, people love labels, and also people are busy. You know, they're busy doing their life. They're busy having a life outside of their employment. You know, they're busy with their home life, their
sure.
family life. So people don't want to spend a lot of time, you know, pondering in a supermarket. It's not like a library where it's fun to look through the shelves. And, you know, in the supermarket, you want to get in, you want to get out. So anything that would make a product, you know, be easy to identify as being better for you, the public likes. I mean, the part of the public are looking for these products. So that is really why the FDA stepped in, you know, decades ago to say, look, we got to put some guidelines on these. You just can't throw something being, you know, low sodium up on a label unless it has certain criteria. So, I mean, that was really the whole idea about it. And it was a great idea, and again, to protect the consumer. It's just that added sugars back in the 1990, there wasn't, you know, an outrageous amount of products that had an outrageous amount of added sugars. Yes, you had your cookies. Yes, you had your cakes. And you had your donuts and your cotton candy machines. But people didn't, it wasn't as many varieties. And now and again, because of that reformulation, mm-hmm. taking the fat out and putting the added sugar in, sugar became snuck into everything. I mean, it's in pasta sauce, tomato sauce. I mean, it's in everything. So that's really what happened, is that these products just became loaded with sugar. And now, the recent dietary guidelines are suggesting we need to get down our added sugars in our diets and no more than 10% of our calories. And right now we are consuming about 99 teaspoons of added sugar, 99 grams of added sugar a day, which is the equivalent of 25 teaspoons daily.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, I know. We have sweet tooth. And it's coming in not just in the, cookies, cakes, and candies. We're gulping it, and it's coming in our food products. So, you know, we're looking to get that down in our diet. So now we have to think about the term healthy probably should include a maximum amount of added sugars in the product for it to be healthy.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a difference at all, Joan, between high fructose corn syrup, sugar, and raw sugar?
Right. Great question. Sugar is sugar. It doesn't matter if it's honey, molasses, high fructose corn syrup. It's all sugar, and your body will utilize it the same way.
I see.
So don't think because something says, oh, sweetened with honey, for example, that should have a halo over it, that's a better food product that has honey over table sugar. It isn't. You tell your body that is sugar, and it's a way to sweeten the product, and all added sugars need to be reduced in the diet.
Hmm. Do we have a need for any sugar? Do we need sugar to perk us up?
Sure. Sugar is, you know, we're born with an innate desire for sugar. We like sugar. You know, you give a little baby the first tasting of rice cereal, oatmeal cereal, you know, they're okay. But, boy, you put a little bit of applesauce on that spoon and you get a grin from ear to ear.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is innate that we like that sweetness. So, you know, we don't necessarily need to remove all of it from our diet. We just need to make sure that we're not having so many calories coming from added sugars that is displacing calories in a diet that should be devoted to more healthier food items such as fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the FDA process now as they reformulate these guidelines. They're looking for public input. They're gathering scientists and nutritionists like you to come up with new recommendations. How does the process work?
It's an excellent process because it leaves it open to the public and people, experts, to weigh in about what a change in the term healthy and what criteria needs to be met in a food product so that it can be healthy. Right now, it has to be low fat. And what you alluded to before with the Kind Bar issue is that, you know, there are many products out there that one would consider to be healthy. Nuts, avocados.
Sure.
These are all lovely, healthy type foods, but because nuts have a predominant amount of fat in it, but keep in mind it's the good, heart, healthy fat, they can't put the word healthy on their product because it's not low fat. Well, this is a great example of where the science, labeling has to catch up to the science. And we know now that we don't necessarily want a very low-fat diet, but we want a diet that's low in saturated fat and more balanced in the heart-healthy fats, which would be the monounsaturated fats found in olive oil, canola oil, and polyunsaturated fats found in, you know, soybean oil and corn oil. And so these nuts are a great combination of being lower in the saturated fat, higher in the heart-healthy fats, plus give you fiber, plus give you other nutrients, good source of protein. So they're all around good, healthy food, yet can't use that word healthy on its label.
Yeah. All right, we're going to have our own public comment section now on all of this, and let's start with an email. Listener is frustrated by some of the ingredients consumers read on labels. This listener says it's full of stuff that is not understandable at all. It's filled with food synonyms of seemingly invented words. It's time, she says, for some truth in labeling.
Right. It is some ingredients, and depending upon the types of foods that you're eating, could have an ingredients list that is quite long. And foods that are heavily processed will tend to have a longer list because they may be adding a lot of additives to it, different types of added sugar to it, and different sources. The oftentimes, though, in some foods, there may be ingredients on there that sounds very technical, but it actually could be vitamins. Something like ascorbic acid, which is really vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ascorbic acid just doesn't sound good at all.
I know.
But, you know, it's vitamin C. So one needs to be, you know, not necessarily that, you know, all the ingredients are really, you know, detrimental or problematic. They may just sound scary, and they really may not be.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We're talking about what it means when a product says healthy. Well, that's all changing. So what it says now is not what it may be saying a few years from now. We'll talk about how long this process is taking. The Food and Drug Administration is reevaluating its definition of healthy. And when you're a food manufacturer, you can use that on the label of a product, on the packaging. Our guest this hour is Joan Salgi-Blake, a registered dietitian, clinical associate professor of nutrition at Boston University, author of Nutrition and You and Nutrition from Science to You. As a consumer, do you look at these kinds of labels? What would make it more easier for you to buy foods that are healthy, that are nutritious? What kind of labeling would be good? And are you happy that the FDA is finally looking at this? Shouldn't it be a process that takes place more than once every 20 years? Because there are foods now, fat being one of them, there are good sources of fat, and labels now don't reflect the fact that we know that. And labels don't reflect the fact that we know that too much sugar can be bad for you as well. Here's our phone number. We're going to you in a minute. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can find us on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in. Mike in Milwaukee, our first caller for you, Joan. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
I heard that there's a thing called the food pyramid, and it's run by the agricultural department. They have a board that discusses that, and I was told that that there's a huge amount of commercial interest sitting on the board in the agricultural department. And in fact, they had to reverse one of their pyramids and change it because these people were upset with it. I don't know if it was dairy. I don't remember. But it was something like that. And the question is, now I know that a lot of money is spent on lobbying, and the government actually more or less is under the influence of lobbyists. We all know that. And so what is your take on that? Are we being dominated by a commercial interest when it comes to, like, the food pyramid and other things?
Mm-hmm. Joan?
Right. So that's a great question. And I can tell you that the latest dietary guidelines for Americans that are dated 2015, that were actually released in January 2016, those guidelines are developed from a committee. And how this develops is there are a committee of experts. It was 14 of them that had expertise in certain areas, predominantly academics they were, and researchers, and to go and look at all the science from that manifests itself from the last dietary guidelines were published, and that was 2010. So over those past 5 years, what has happened in the world of nutrition, and what has changed, and what should we doing to help Americans eat more healthily to fight the chronic diseases of our time, such as heart disease, cancer, certain strokes, and type 2 diabetes. What happens is this committee puts together a report, and this report is their consensus, their summary of the research to date, which says what changes should be made in the diets, in the dietary guidelines to help Americans eat more healthily. The USDA and the Health and Human Services will get a copy of that report, and from that will come up with the dietary guidelines. During that period, the public can weigh in on this report and the findings in this report. And anybody can weigh in. It could be you, it could be me, it could be organizations, it could be corporations, it could be food companies, anybody can. So everybody at that time could have a chance to weigh in. And the process then goes into effect where they look at this comments, they look at the report, and then they come up, based upon science, what the latest dietary recommendations are. And the pyramid is now gone, and it has been replaced with something called My Plate, which is a wonderful visual that is just representative of the five food groups and how your plate should mimic them in portions and variety. Mm. And you can find a copy of that on myplate.gov as such. So that's the process that how it is. It is based on science. Now, to answer your question, is lobbyists, yes, there's lobbyists in there, and the influence of that is that's what, you know, lobbyists will do, but again, it's up to these up to the USDA and these institutions to make these recommendations based on science, and this committee worked very, very hard and had no ties to business or no ties, no personal interest in this, to compile the latest science and bring it forward.
Thanks, Mike, so much for your call. We go next to Rebecca in Appleton. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I really appreciate your guest insights. I wanted to ask her opinion on something. A friend of mine yesterday had a can of energy drink at work that was an 8-ounce can of drink, and I took a look at the label because I was interested in it, and we compared that label to a can of Mountain Dew and found that they had similar sugar content.
Wow.
And similar caffeine content. And this was a product that someone had given him who owns a home-based weight loss and healthy living business. And when I looked at the can, I noticed that it also said that the product was not regulated or evaluated by the FDA. And I thought that was interesting that products to be marketed as healthy for you and have that level of sugar and caffeine and no regulation at all.
Yeah, that's interesting. Joan, how did that happen?
Okay, well, that is a dietary supplement, those types of drinks, and that's where they are regulated under there. What has to happen with those energy drinks and as well as any other kind of sports drinks or any sweetened beverages is really what would help it, and I'm really hoping that this occurs, and the FDA is now looking at this, is to put the amount of added sugars on the labels of those energy drinks and the labels of all beverages, so that people could see immediately how much is really from added sugars, how much of the calories. And they're even contemplating, it was thrown out there, that they not only put grams, but you put the visual icon of a little teaspoon so you can see the conversion.
That's a good idea.
Grams over to teaspoons. So in other words, what I had mentioned early in the conversation here, that Americans are consuming 99 grams of sugar added sugars a day. And, of course, that number doesn't really resonate with you, but when you say that it's the equivalent to 25 teaspoons of added sugar, then that becomes an eye-opener. So those kinds of drinks are just really, when you look at that, and that was really very, very astute of you, is to compare it to a soda, which we know a soda is. That's what a soda is water and added sugar. But you think of it as an energy drink, it's something else. But clearly, when it goes back-to-back, that many of these added energy drinks are just pure sugar with maybe other things added to it, and the energy is coming from the sugar, and the burst, the wake up, the stimulant is really coming from the caffeine.
Hmm. Thank you, Rebecca, very much. And that whole regulation of the supplement industry is very problematic, isn't it?
You know, the issue is that these products can be called that versus beverage, you know, like a soft drink. They don't come under food, but they come under more dietary supplements. So, you know, it can be there, but they still have to have truth in labeling. So, again, if we get those added sugars on the label, that will have to be, put on that label.
Oh, I see.
Get a better sense that it's that high in sugar.
Yeah. Thank you very much for your call. Bob in Madison is next. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kathleen. My first issue is making the difference between healthy and healthful, but I think I'd probably need to give up on that issue.
I don't know. I'm ready to go there.
Well, healthful is food and healthy is people.
Okay.
But I think politics aside, we need to approach this issue from a consumer perspective, and I've been vegetarian for 30 years. I think consumers really need to read food labels with the same vigilance as a vegetarian does. And so I am always surprised by where meat products and, you know, come into our food stream. But in that process, I find all sorts of different things in food labels that I'd rather not know about.
Hmm. What do you think, Joan?
Well, you know, yes. I mean, if people, I think if people have the time and the interest, most definitely enjoy it, read the food labels. But I think there is a big population out there that maybe doesn't have enough out of time on their hands. And so I think it's up to us to make sure that there's transparency, that when somebody's food is labeled something like the word healthy, it would be truly healthy. And that we can't exclude things such as nuts and olive oil from you know, that term healthy only because it doesn't meet an old requirement. The interesting thing what you just said about consumers should read and have and be empowered, you know, consumers really can talk with their food dollars. And what I say to that is consumers do not understand how much power they really, really have. So if you find products that just are, you know, to you, add a bunch of added sugar and nothing else, and they're costing $5 for just pure sugar and water, it's up to you to say, you know, I'm not going to buy it. And so if you don't buy it, they will no longer make it. So, I mean, that's their job, is to make products that people want and make products that taste good and fit into people's lifestyles. So the consumer has a lot of power, and they can talk and use that power by using their food dollar and deciding where that's going to go, where that food dollar is going in the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. I have read, tell me if this is correct or not, that this whole process of being able to determine whether or not a product is, and Bob is right about this, let's be a stickler for the language, healthful, may take, with public input and all of the scientists who have to get together to look at this, that it could be a many years long process. Is that right?
Well, what my understanding is that now is the comments are out there. The FDA will take comments. Typically, it's 30 to 60 to 90 days, and then they look at all the comments and then make a decision. Now, that it could take a while to get that decision. I mean, we've been looking at this whole issue for added sugars on the label and the push for added sugars for over a year. So it could take a while to change, but change has to come. I mean, this is science. Science evolves, and then we have to change things that are based on old science if new science has replaced it because it's better science.
Sure. Thanks, Bob, for your call. Our number, 800-486-8655, Mary in Rubicon. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to let you know, about 2 years ago, I went from eating a low-fat, drinking, you know, diet soda, and I was way overweight. Anyway, I went to a much healthier diet, eating mostly vegetables, but protein with each meal. I use olive oil, coconut oil. I substituted dates for sugars if I did want sweets, and it works wonderfully. It tastes better than processed sugar, and I feel I lost a third of my body weight.
Woo!
And my cholesterol numbers are off the charts wonderful now. And I just feel fantastic, and I basically look to the Dr. Oz diet because it's very balanced, and I eat plenty. But taking diet soda out of my life really helped a lot because that stuff is just not good for you.
No, it's not very good for you, is it?
Anyway, I feel fantastic. Like I said, now I'm at the lower end of my optimum weight scale, whereas before I was just about at the obese level. So that's what a difference it made.
Oh, what a good story, Mary. Thank you for calling, Joan.
Mary, congratulations. That must just feel fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. That's super. You know, the best science we have, longest science we have is on the Mediterranean diet. And when you look at the Mediterranean diet, these people lived in the Mediterranean. They had a diet, very much rich in fruits and vegetables like Mary is doing, grains and you know, fish for their dinner. They used olive oil. They had nuts. But they had sweets, very, very, you know, special occasions. And, you know, when we look at that kind of a diet, it sounds like what Mary just did is they, you know, removed all the maybe heavily processed foods that really didn't have a lot of good nutrition and maybe just had a lot of added sugar to it. She was able to lose weight. She was able to lose weight because she went to fruits and vegetables, and fruits have sweets which have fiber, and they're going to fill you up, whole fruits like the dates, as she's mentioned, before they fill you out. You know, and you could eat a lot of candy and really not get full, where the dates, it would fill you up because of the fiber, and it's just you have to chew it. It's Mother Nature's finest. So we have great data from that to say that those kinds of diets are really good and heart healthy and good for longevity. So again, you know, getting back to food, getting back to eating, and my plate that we just talked about at myplate.gov, that visual, if you look at it, half of the plate of your plate, it should be full of fruits and vegetables, which are with about a quarter from grains, and mostly whole grains, and then a little bit from the, you know, another maybe quarter-ish from lean protein, predominantly fish and lean meats and poultry or beans, and then, of course, a serving of dairy because it's a great source of calcium and could be vitamin D. And when you look at that plate, that's going to be a full plate, but it's yeah, it could be very, very waste-friendly because if it's really just the foods in their, you know, minimally processed form,
yes,
it's going to fill you up. It's going to make you feel good. You'll get natural sweetness from the fruits and will likely cut calories if you've been having a diet that's been having a lot of sweets and treats and snack items.
Mm-hmm.
It will definitely cut calories.
Mm. Thank you so much, Mary, and congratulations to you. Everett in Woodman, hi.
Hi. I want to talk about labeling.
All right.
I think there's a great need for being very open about what's in the product. I have an extreme allergy to a few of the foods that are never put in there. First of all, I have to avoid corn. I mean, I have to avoid eggs. And eggs and wheat and sometimes soy are listed on the labeling. However, they hardly ever list on their corn, like high fructose corn syrup. This is, corn syrup under kind of a hidden name of xanthan gum, and also over there. And when these products are put into anything that I have to eat or purchase, I may have 3 to 4 days of very extreme problems
mm-hmm.
with eating that. And so I think, if the labeling had on it about corn or, you know, and they may even kind of hide it by saying, it is a filler, like from three seeds. Well, three seeds, the cheapest one is usually on their corn. And this also goes all the way into pills that you take. According to the druggist, that some of the pills that I've had to take in the past years, the filler in there many times is starch
mm-hmm.
and corn starch. And so I've had to go through special orders, for example, of some of the medicines that were prescribed simply because nobody really knows what's in it that you're buying.
Yeah, Joan.
You know, my heart goes out to you because there's a lot of people that have allergies, and for you, food shopping isn't necessarily that much fun. And the people who have allergies such as yours, where we have hidden, the best thing to do is to, what I would recommend you do, is sit down with a registered dietitian nutritionist and have that person help you plan a diet with the proper food sources that can help you minimize any discomfort in adding foods into your diet that can cause a problem. And the interesting thing about meeting with a registered dietitian nutritionist is that many times it could be your insurance company could cover that a visit, depending on your diagnosis and what you have. So what you may want to do is first look at what your insurance policy does cover nutrition counseling by a registered dietitian. You can get on the Wisconsin Dietetic Association website to find one in your area. There's a national one at eatright.org, which is the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. And let's help a professional who's trained
in
these areas to help you, because it shouldn't be a full-time job for you to go food shopping and to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And a person like that could really help you with finding products that meet your nutritional needs without causing you problems.
Yeah, thanks, Everett, so much for your call. We have some lines open if you want to join our conversation. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the Food and Drug Administration reevaluating its definition of healthy and when the word can be used to market a product, and they haven't looked at this extensively since 1994, so it's time for a reexamination, and we've changed our... scientific evidence has evolved on this so that there are certain foods that really are healthful foods now, but we didn't think they were in 1994. So this process of reexamination is going on as we speak. And our guest, Joan Salji Blake, is a dietitian, and she is a professor of clinical associate professor of nutrition at Boston University. She's an author as well, Nutrition and You and Nutrition from Science to You. More phone calls momentarily here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To Dimitri in Milwaukee next. Hi, Dimitri.
Hi, Kathleen and Joan.
Hi.
Hey. Hi. Had a quick question, Joan, specifically to you. So there was a caller that called in, and I was going to pivot on a question they asked. They talked about lobbying and their, effect on the FDA. And I know that there's a profound difference between the U.S. regulations that we have here and the ones in Europe in specific, but there's even countries in Africa that won't allow some foods that we allow here. And you kind of gave an implicit endorsement of the FDA that they do their work and that there's experts that look at the food that we eat and that's allowed here, but maybe it's being cynical. I'm just not confident that everything that's allowed here, including GMOs and other types of food, that is allowed in other places. So I don't know if you could comment on the differences in us and the rest of the world.
Right. You know, each country is going to have its own guidelines. So the United States, we have our guidelines, we have our systems in place. The good news is with the Internet, you can always look up what the guidelines are for other countries, look at the research, the data, and it should be transparent to understand what is propelling them to allow something in a food and not allow something in the food. You know, in the United States, we based it on, we have a process in place, and that's the way it is. This is something that could change from country to country, but basically we're looking at, in the case of the term healthy, and what's happening right now is, how is this term being used now in the foods that Americans are eating, and does it meet the needs of what Americans are eating? And, you know, the food supply in Italy, just say, may not, is very different than what's here with us. You know, you could, you know, possibly they don't have as many processed foods available to them as easily as us. And so we have to work with our food system, with the food products that are available, the food products that Americans are eating, and then regulate them appropriately. And that's just the way the system is set up.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dimitri. Tom is next in Cedarburg. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Another interesting show.
Thanks, Tom.
My question is concerning sugars. I'd heard that the corn sweetened, the high fructose, the way the corn sugar has changed is less healthier for you than other types of sugars, and your body has a harder time processing it. And I was wondering if you could tell me if that's true or not.
Sure. That has actually, the most recent research consensus is that really that your body, it doesn't matter. We used to think that that could be problematic. Some preliminary data came out years ago that might have suggested that, but now as we look at more research come in, sugar is sugar, and whether it's high fructose corn syrup, table sugar, you know, honey, whatever, it's all the same. All of it has, all of us, on average, Americans are having too much of it, and we need to cut back on all varieties.
Thanks, Tom, for your call. Judy in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi, I was wondering about GMO labeling. If they were labeled as such, we'd have an easier time sort of casting our vote against GMO.
Right. Very interesting topic, very timely topic. Yesterday it was just released from the National Academy of Sciences based on science, and you can Google this and look at this report that basically, you know, looked at genetically modified foods, genetically engineered foods, and about safety of consumption by humans and by animals. And it really, what it came down to, that the GMOs are no more harmful than regular conventionally grown or raised foods. So that question of labeling needs to be, again, addressed. But now what I liked about this National Academy of Sciences report is we finally have some science looking at this to find out, you know, where are their problems? Do these cause problems? Should the public be concerned about consuming them? And this report pretty much came up and said that there doesn't seem to be a risk at this moment in time for consuming these kinds of products. So from that, you know, that will be go the next step about GMO labeling and what really should happen.
Mm. Thank you, Judy, for your call. We have some lines open, and we've been busy. If you're trying to get through, now would be a good time for you to call 800-486-8655. Going back, Joan, to almost the beginning of the conversation here, how important is it, and do we need more information on a package than just the claim that this is a healthful product? Do we need to know why? But we're also looking for something simple so consumers don't have to go through ingredient after ingredient after ingredient. What is most helpful to consumers?
Right. I think the most helpful, rather than the front of the label, is really the side of the label.
Mm.
And what is being proposed is a new nutrition facts panel that will change what the consumer now is looking at. And it's going to be more consumer-friendly. It will tell you more in a bold lettering what the calories are per serving that will just like almost shout out at you, because that's one of the most important things that consumers look for. It is going to propose to have those added sugars, which I think is critical, because this is extremely confusing. You could be in the orange juice aisle, and you open up you look over the nutrition facts panel for a container of 100% orange juice, and you look at the quote-unquote sugars, and then next to it could be an orange drink, and you look at the nutrition facts panel, and you look at the quote-unquote sugars, and they could be the same.
Yes.
Now, what the issue is one is drink, that's your buzzword, drink cocktail. Those are buzzwords that it's not juice, but something's been added to it. Well, with this new label, if it has added sugars, the label from the orange juice, next to the word added sugars, it will say zero. Next to the orange drink, it will say whatever it is, 22 grams, 28 grams, whatever it is. I don't know off the top of my head. But the issue is that that consumer will be able to identify that, okay, it's orange juice. We know it's sweet. It's like those dates that she was enjoying to satisfy her sweet tooth. But there's no added sugar. It's Mother Nature's finest where the drink is. So I think what they're going to do, I think that this proposed label, if they can make these changes and put on it exactly the information that Americans need to have a diet that is lower in sugar, lower in saturated fat, higher in fiber, things that is suggested in the dietary guidelines, it will make shopping much more easy. So go for what you like. turn the package over, look at that nutrition fact panel, and let it be your guide to whether you think you this is a food that would work well in your diet.
Yeah. Dennis in Wautoma, hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
How are you folks?
Good, how are you?
Great show, and thank you. I spent the last 25 years monitoring my diet, my carbs, and I lost 29 pounds the first time I cut carbs out. Turned right around and put them right back on, and realized that if I was going to use carbs and sugars, of course, which are carbs or which are somewhat like that, I was going to have to make a lifestyle change. And so basically for the past 25 years, I've kept carbs down to an absolute minimum most of the time, allowing myself a little bit of additional carbs, like as in sweets and desserts and things on the weekends, but otherwise keeping it to salads and vegetables and proteins all through the week. And I've discovered now, because the Atkins diet's been around for 25 years, that you can get low-carb, high-fiber pastas and tortillas and all kinds of things that fit the profile of that diet. Well, I was just wondering what your guest thinks of that. The other thing I was going to add real quickly is I spent 6 years managing the food service for Northwestern University in Evanston, and we had a dietitian on staff there, and it was absolutely essential for us, for people with food allergies, to have them consult with her first and then have us try to work around some of the more serious allergies, as well as some of the people who thought they had celiac disease or other things that really were just imagining things. The dietitian got to the bottom of it pretty quickly and helped us out a lot in terms of finding a safe, appropriate diet for these people.
Mm-hmm. Joan?
Well, thank you. That what you said, the latter part of that comment, that having the registered dietitian at campuses is booming now because these students are coming with allergies and diet concerns, and it is. You're feeding students that this is the only access to food. They don't have a kitchen, a facility, so the food must be safe, and having a registered dietitian on board to oversee to make sure that people with allergies or food concerns, that they can still have a healthy diet is terrific. Regarding the carbohydrate issue is that some carbohydrates are better for you than others. And we know that fruits and vegetables, whole fruits, whole vegetables, and whole grains are a better source of the carbohydrates. The simple carbohydrates, the sweets and treats, tend to be higher in calories and will tend to be a lower in nutrition per bite. You bite into an orange slice, navel orange slice. It's yummy. It's delicious. Great source of potassium and vitamin C. You are bite into an orange candy slice, one of those little candies that look like an orange slice.
Right.
Yeah. There's no vitamin C. It's just pure sugar. You said something that was quite brilliant and quite enlightening. And what you said was that I only have my sweets or treats, my carbs on the weekend. And that is something that is really, really something that we need to just listen to again and focus on. And I'm going to tell you, it is not so much that carbs or sugars are bad for you and the problem behind the weight management issues in the American diet and heart disease and type 2 diabetes. What I believe it is, it's the frequency that this. And, you know, I grew up, I'm Italian, I grew up, and my mother would go food shopping once a week, and she would buy a pint of Breyer's ice cream, which, 100 years ago, that was like the cream of the cream.
Sure it was. Yep.
And knock off Oreo cookies and a big Hershey's bar. I remember this. And, being a fan with my siblings, it was every man for himself. So if you didn't eat the ice cream and the cookies and the candy, your brother or sister were going to get it. So basically, she would go food shopping Thursday night, and by Saturday morning, there was none of it was left.
Right.
So what the difference was is my mother didn't go food shopping again until next Thursday. So there was no refills. And what's happening now is when all those sweets and treats are gone on Saturday, you go out and buy more. And that's where I believe the problem is. There has always been soda. There has always been cupcakes and cookies and bakery items. But this is not something you weren't drinking soda, sweetened beverages every day. You had them on occasion. You had them for holidays.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have unlimited cookies and candy and sweets in the house. You maybe bought some and they were gone. They were gone. And that was the end of it. And you didn't refill
right.
it before it. So I think a lot of this is to blame is that we, again, keep refilling this and having these treat foods, these foods, special occasion foods, more than on a special occasion.
Yeah. Joan, thank you so much for the hour. It was highly informative and fun. And that's good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well,
Thanks for being with us.
Take care.
Our pleasure. Joan Salgi Blake, a registered dietitian, clinical associate professor of nutrition at Boston University, the author of Nutrition and You and Nutrition from Science to You. This hour talking about the Food and Drug Administration reevaluating its definition of healthy, which really should be healthful. Thanks to Chris Malinda for on air for producing Chris Molina, and also what's wrong with me? And thanks to Scotty Myers for on air production here in Milwaukee. Until tomorrow.